Hi, I'm Sarah, grateful recovering compulsive overeater. Great to be here and great to be with you all this weekend and tonight and on this path. Everyone okay if we just all take a deep breath together? Or at least I will. The topic that I am tasked with tonight is spiritual awareness and step 11. My experience in Overeaters Anonymous started my first meeting, which, as far as I know, was sometime in September 1989 in St. Paul, church on St. Clair and Pryor. There is a person in this room tonight who was maybe not at that first meeting. I don't know, they'll have to remind me. I say this when they're around often, but who I met at that meeting, I still hold her very close to my heart. And you know what? Time, I want to be sure I know where my timer is. Oh, that's you? Okay. Thanks, Chance. Okay. I was not aware of that I was a compulsive overeater until I came to Overeaters Anonymous, or shortly before I came to Overeaters Anonymous. I was definitely eating compulsively way, way, way before that, but I did not see it. I, have early memories of knowing exactly where sweets, particularly, but anything that was special and exotic or just recreational was in our house, which wasn't there very much. I don't think we had very much of it. So, you know, when it's not there, you turn other things into recreation, other foods that may not seem very recreational, but they work in a pinch. And I remember that from a very young age. There was another addiction prevalent in my household and had been prevalent in the household of both of my parents. So I grew up in a family, in a home, where the addiction model was our way of being. That was how I grew up. I didn't know it was bad or good. There were definitely things I didn't particularly care for, but I didn't know anything else. My parents didn't know anything else. I mean, it was, you know, definitely a generational experience in my life. Because some of those people started getting some recovery when I was middle grades, somewhere 11, 12, 13 years old, I was exposed to the 12 steps through that experience. Did not embrace it for myself. I was a kid, I guess I probably just didn't see it. But I came to understand that I was part of a system that didn't work very well, let's put it that way. Dysfunction. Started to hear words about dysfunction, understand that. So I did continue to dip my toe in the waters of understanding that a little bit. Right before I came into OA, I had an experience where I actually lost some weight. I didn't weigh myself, but my weight was at least 30 to 40 pounds more than I weigh now. But in that experience, I got scared because I lost weight, but I didn't recognize myself. And it was much more than just physical. I just didn't recognize myself. And I didn't feel like myself. And then I saw my compulsive overeating because I dove in head first. And it's not that I wasn't doing that before, but I was in a lot of denial and I did not see it. So then I saw it like a rushing freight train coming at me. And started to understand, I've heard it described this way from others sometimes, that it was like I was going to the corner to get, you know, to buy my drug, to get my fix. I actually lived in an apartment building that had a corner store across the street. And I went to the corner and I did this, you know, day in and day out, and it scared me. And I had enough awareness of the 12 steps to know that I could get help, that I could ask for help. So I did, and I got to that meeting. And I am forever grateful. I know there was a speaker. I know that they said something that really mattered to me. I wept pretty much through the whole thing. Really sloppy, messy crying. You know, I guess we hear it sometimes called ugly cry, but I don't like to judge it because, you know, they're just tears. But it was where I belonged. And I have never, with as much humility as I can muster, I stand here and tell you, I have never doubted for one minute that this is where I belong. I may have not wanted to come. I may have thought, you know, this should be done by now, or that person irritates me, or this is frustrating, or this hurts. But this is where I belong. So, so I made a few notes. That's why I'm trying to make sure I stay on task here. So in the OA 12 and 12, I read this, it's actually step two, but it was working on step two with somebody the other day, and it just really hit me. I think this, it hit me because it feels like where spiritual awareness began for me. This willingness to act, it's the very last paragraph in the 12 and 12 on step two. This willingness to act on faith then was the key to step two. It was the beginning of a healing process that would relieve us of the compulsion to overeat and bring stability to our unbalanced lives. As we responded with action to the love we had been shown in OA, the result was a new faith in ourselves, in others, and in the power of that love. And when I heard that, I thought, well, that's a beginning. That's the beginning of spiritual awareness, or that's how it hit me. And from for today, the strength of man, this is page 155, June 3rd. The strength of man consists in finding out the way in which God is going and going that way too, from Henry Ward Beecher. God's way is a path of spiritual principles that make my life work under any conditions. I know that, but once I have good abstinence and weight loss, it is tempting to rest on my laurels and ignore the suggestions to continue seeking spiritual recovery. Like others before me, sooner or later, I discovered that God's way does not end with abstinence and weight loss or even regular attendance at meetings. The recovering compulsive overeater who has what I want are, without exception, working the 12-step program on a continuing basis and practicing spiritual principles in everything they do. And it talks about taking direction from steps 3 and 11. And step 11 says, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. I struggle with words to describe and to explain how I experience spiritual awareness. But what I can say is that this practice, showing up at meetings, listening to all of you, listening to reading literature, coming to experiences like this, has built my foundation of spiritual awareness. It is not a practice that for me is a religious one. It's more than that. And And it keeps me from, it doesn't keep me from, it helps me to stave off the fear that I ate over. The anxiousness that I ate over. The self-pity and self-doubt that I ate over. I didn't know how to do a grown-up life. I just didn't know how. I knew how to be very dramatic and, you know, and draw drama towards me. And if I didn't have any going on, I'm going to come and find you, and I'm going to find your drama, because I'm really good at helping you figure out what's wrong with you. And I got a lot of kudos for it. I really did. And it was sustaining, sort of, you know, in that way that things that our obsessions are sustaining, you know. If as long as I'm doing them all the time, they sustain me. And then there's stillness, and there's a lot of stillness in this practice, this spiritual awareness. I do now. I appreciate it now. I mean, you know, just this beautiful lake that we're next to, and just even times when we're all in this room and we're just quiet, you know. We have a lot to say, and we're excited to be together, but we can also be quiet together. Wow, that's beyond my wildest dreams. In the appendix of the big book, in this appendix to a spiritual experience, talks about the most of our experiences, and this is more about spiritual experience. Thank you very much. I did not have a lightning bolt spiritual experience. I'm still having my spiritual experiences, so you may be witnessing some kind of spiritual experience right here. It's very gradual. It can happen anytime and anywhere, which is why I love the principle of spiritual awareness, because awareness, I cannot learn from that which I am not aware of. And the more I am aware, it still just scares me to my bootstraps, but I know it's okay. I know it's gonna be okay, because you all remind me. These books remind me. My higher power reminds me. So most of our experiences are what psychologist William James calls of the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. And they talk about, most of us think awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. So right in that sentence, we have the spiritual experience, but it's awareness of a power greater than myself. My mother, who was in recovery, and we didn't talk about, but she knew I was in recovery, and she's in recovery, but we didn't necessarily talk about our programs, but it just woven and out of our years over time. And she used to say, I have a higher power, and it's not me. You know, and some days I just need to keep it as simple as that. So how do I practice spiritual awareness and conscious contact? For the most part, I do what other people tell me works for them and see if it works for me. Some does, some doesn't. But I never have a bad experience. It never hurts me to give something a try that someone in a meeting said, this really helps me connect with my higher power. I've used writing, I've used meditation and prayer. I'm more comfortable with meditation than I am with prayer. In the big book, there's a passage that talks about memorizing some prayers. I did that, and then for many, many months over the years, I would pick one, and that's what I would say to myself first thing when I get up in the morning. I do try. That's been kind of a new thing. Somebody said to me, something about connecting with their higher power before their feet hit the floor And that made sense to me. It's like, yeah, before I do anything else, say something to my higher power, or ask my higher power to say something to me. And right now it's the first three steps before I get out of bed in the morning. You know, it's a practice, and then it gives me more awareness. My awareness wanders. So I follow a plan of eating. I was at a conference once, and the speaker said, weighing and measuring my food is the most spiritual thing I do every day. And I hear the nods and the hmms. I was in the back of the room, and I said, really? What are you talking about? I mean, I really, and it wasn't that I wasn't following a plan of eating, but I thought, spiritual? Seriously? Over time, back to that educational variety, it has come to make a lot more, be a lot more clear to me why that makes sense. Because it's a practice that I do where I invite myself to practice clear, intentional honesty around my food, which then I can have that clarity, intention, and honesty as I go through my day. If the food is in the way, I'm not going to be very clear, intentional, or honest. And I'm also not going to have a lot of spiritual awareness for me. So again, you know, I don't always get it the first two dozen times someone says it to me. Which actually brings me to one more thing from that appendix that I want to read. Or actually, I take that back. It's from ours. No, it's from the big book. But anyway, in that spiritual experience appendix, the quote at the end says, there is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. I know I'm not the only person who knows that one, by Herbert Spencer. My brother loves that quote. He's also in recovery. And he used to quote it to me all the time. Again, I'm like, really? Like, I get it. It's a great quote. Okay, move on. It really, really, and I did that for sure. That isn't going to work. That's stupid. What? You know, why? It's a waste of time. How many times have I said, what a waste of time? Or done things that were a waste of time because I thought it would make my life better and, you know, beat my head against the wall, and then it was a waste of time. But contempt prior to investigation. And so in these rooms, what I get to do for spiritual awareness and to practice this and practice step 11, conscious contact, is listen, show up, listen, practice. In a way, we share a belief that we can each recover through a spiritual relationship with a power that is greater than ourselves alone. Not easy, but simple. I can complicate things too. I can really make things complicated. So, I'm going to close with two readings here. One is from For Today, page 115. Solitude is bearable only with God, by Andre Gide. I can keep busy, work hard, and keep solitude at bay. There comes a time, however, when I am alone with myself, when I feel the presence of my higher power. I let my thoughts wander into shadowy crevices, unafraid, and I learn much that I did not know before. I experience truths such as fear has been a fact of my life. Felt as a fact, it no longer seeps into every facet of my existence. and I am no longer its victim. Without solitude, I would not have seen that truth. Without the company of my higher power, I love that, the company of my higher power, I could not venture into solitude, a place devoid of distraction where I am face to face with myself. Very scary. In conscious contact with God, I easily face what I cannot bear to look at otherwise. And finally, the last paragraph from our OA 12 and 12, from making sure I'm on the right step, step 11. Our higher power is the only source of help that is always available to us, always strong enough to lift us up and set our feet on the path of life. Prayer and meditation are our links to this unfailing source. Practice regularly, they open our lives to the comfort we sought in food but could never find. Through prayer and meditation, we align ourselves with a higher power, higher spiritual power, which gives us everything we need to live our fullest, to our fullest potential.